advocates and lawmakers call it the missing and murdered Indigenous women crisis. In some places, Native women are 10 times more likely to be murdered than the national average. Native women also go missing at higher rates than other groups. But many Native families feel they're ignored by law enforcement, and complicated jurisdictions mean these crimes are vastly underreported and many go unsolved. Advocates have been renewing their push for legislation or federal proposals that would help lower these murder rates and provide accurate data on the number of women who have gone missing. Jenny Monet is an independent journalist who's been investigating violence in Indian country, and she's a tribal citizen of the Pueblo of Laguna. I spoke with her about why there's been more attention on this issue lately.
One of, I think, the key pieces of narrative to what we're seeing now on the ground and attending to gender violence in Indian country and in the United States has to squarely look at the case of Savannah LaFontaine Graywind, a 22-year-old Spirit Lake Nation mother who was murdered and her unborn baby was extracted from her womb and survived. It was horrific for anyone who was watching, in particular in Indian country. There was just widespread heartbreak. And what it did was it really set in motion for Indian country to look to lawmakers to start demanding attention to this issue. It wasn't new. In fact, in the immediate aftermath of her murder in August 2017, what we saw was this outpouring of families, mothers, aunties, fathers, all really sharing their stories of a loved one whose murder case had turned cold or whose loved one had never really been investigated in terms of their disappearances.
What are some of the things that Native American communities are looking to have changed that can be handled from a legislative perspective? Is there any meaningful legislation on the table right now?
I think what you said best is meaningful. All too often, policies get passed for Indian country that are really seen as kind of well-intentioned but half-measured. For instance, Savannah's Act itself, which was introduced by former Senator Heidi Heitkamp in 2017, about 6 weeks after Savannah LaFontaine was murdered, what we saw was that even though it was named after Savannah herself, who was murdered in a municipality, Fargo, North Dakota, the law that was being proposed at the time, Savannah's Act, was an act that would have only impacted data collection on cases like hers that existed on tribal lands, on reservations. And so it was kind of a half-measured fit that didn't really seize what the problem was on the ground. Three quarters of Native Americans live in urban environments off reservation. And many of those cases of Native American women and girls going missing, trafficked, whose murders or other cases have turned cold, they're happening not on reservation lands. Justice systems for the longest time are treated in Indian country as afterthoughts. And that's simply because of the sovereign to sovereign relationship that tribes have with the federal government. The jurisdiction determines who responds to crimes in Indian country. And oftentimes that means it's the federal government, the FBI, which is overtaxed, underfunded, and for the most part, not responded to crimes in Indian country. And that's where the dialogue is right now, is looking at how best to improve and enhance cross-jurisdictional response to violent crimes, not only on tribal lands, but also to look at the reality on the ground that border towns and urban cities where Native Americans are mostly populated, how do we respond to those crimes as well?
And we know that Canada has had similar crises when it comes to their Native women population. Are there any things that Canada has done that we here in the United States can learn from in this in sort of approaching this crisis?
Oh, for sure. Canada is so much further ahead than we are here in the United States. In fact, I think that there's anticipated watch on their national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. It was set in motion in 2017 with full support under Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. A report will come out in June. And what's central to that report is that over the course of 2 years, roughly, we heard from Indigenous women, fathers, parents, survivors, and loved ones who each went to this commission, this three-member commission, to testify and to share what were the key points of their tragedy and the goal of that commission is to take a look at the strong commonalities, what are the most authentic through lines of this epidemic, and from that, where do we start to really look at how to solve the problem? What we've seen is a lack of data, a real lack of understanding from policymakers' point of view who are looking from the outside in at this issue. And now what I think we'll see from our Canadian neighbors is this kind of nuance, this super nuanced approach to start to tackle this issue with regard to what are the actual realities on the ground in tribal community.
Jenny, what do the Native American women that you've spoken to hope to see from the state and federal laws at this point?
To be sure, this has been a long and steady movement of Native American women. It's quite astounding when you look back over the decades and see how many of these women who are now revered as some of the first leaders, I think of Tilly Black Bear and other women, they have really been the ones to shine a light on the lack of justice just in general in Indian country. And I think that what you're starting to see now with even state representatives like Ruth Ann Buffalo, who's the first Native American Democrat to serve in the state ledge in North Dakota, you know, she's really trying to expand this to look at violence across Indian country, not just for Native American women and girls. Because I think that what we all understand as Native peoples is that the violence runs deep and that, you know, it affects our entire families, and that includes our men. And I have to say this as well, just in terms of looking at this issue, the issue of police bias can't be ignored, because when we start to look at why these cases have turned cold for so long, there is a strong sentiment that police have a certain level of perhaps discrimination in weighing whether this, you know, cases from Indian country or involving Native Americans might be less important. And so I think that when we look at, say, for instance, the aspirational checklist, it's taking a look at the wider issue, to be sure.
Jenny Monet is an independent journalist who's been investigating violence in Indian country. Jenny, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.